Hello and welcome to a responsive day for the 12th of Tishrei, Yud Bet Tishrei. Today we're going to learn from the Tit Eliezer in Volume 9, Chelek Tet Siman Lamed, responsive number 30. We thank the OU, Rabbi Jacob Bromwich and David Hachhauser, for all of their assistance in making these shiurim, these talks, available to you. And the discussion is actually one that comes up all the time. One, with the advent of modern travel and with the renewal and great growth of the Jewish people in the land of Israel, an issue that has always been alive, but an issue that comes up even more often, is the question of what to do when people from one place find themselves in another place on a Yom Tov. This is generally treated as a question of, if a person is from one place, in da'ato lachzor, and the person intends to return to his or her own original place, when and how does that person observe customs that differ between the place where they're from and the place where they are? So let's say in one place they didn't eat kidyot, another place they did eat kidyot. So what would you do? So that's a whole topic of its own that comes up in lots of areas. This is often treated as one of those areas. So you theoretically say if a person from Eretz Yisrael, from the land of Israel, who keeps one day of Chag, one day of Yom Tov, finds him or herself in America or another place that keeps 2 days of Yom Tov, what would you do and how would you treat that situation? Or in the reverse, right? You're from Chutz La'aretz, what would you do? So that's where you get things like Jews who think that if they're from outside of Israel, they're in Israel for Yom Tov, and they count as Jews from outside of Israel, Jews from exile, they think that they have to keep 2 days in lots and lots of ways, and that's what many Jews do. That would be one way of looking at it. In that way of looking at it, you'd still think that the Jews from Israel who find themselves in exile for Yom Tov would have to keep not a straight up 1 day, because there's another halacha that they have to keep the stringencies of the place where they are, and that creates all sorts of issues, all sorts of concerns that we'll see in this responsum. So the answer was that, and here's the but. But I think that many people from Israel who find themselves in exile for Yom Tov don't understand the way to handle it, the way to react to it, and the way to treat it. And that's a topic that comes up several times. I just recently taped a tshuva. You won't hear it till another bet comes around, unless you go and look for it. But Moshe Feinstein was asked a similar question, and he gave some guidance on that issue. In that case, there were people who really were counted as Israelis for Yom Tov, although they thought maybe they didn't. Now we're going to tell somebody who thinks he's an Israeli that for these halachic purposes, he's not quite going to be. I hope that wasn't too much of a spoiler. Let's see the discussion. It's a Ben Eretz Yisrael. It's an Israeli who has gone to Chutz La'aretz. He's going somewhere. It doesn't say where, but he's going, let's say, on Shlichut, for example. He's going to live in a place for 2 years, or his company transferred him there for 2 years, but he's going to live in, let's just make it up, in Wichita, Kansas, for 2 years. And he's going with his wife and his children. And so what does he do on Yom Tov Sheni? And when asking the question, it's pretty clear that he thought that the question was, I, as an Israeli, how do I handle Yom Tov Sheni? We'll get to some of that. And this is from the 12th of Tishrei, and in this response, I'm not sure why he wrote it this way, but the Tzitzit Ezer writes, Yud Bet Tishrei Lifnot Boker, towards morning, meaning it's sort of like he was up all night, I think, writing, and I think it's because, I think what he must have mentioned, this is from, Tavshin Chavav, which would be 1965. It's Tishrei of Tavshin Chavav, it's right after Yom Kippur of Tavshin Chavav, coming up. So because he says, since you're asking this, halacha lemaaseh, you're already in the new place, you're already in, I made up Wichita, it could be Montevideo, it could be Chile, it could be who knows where, but somewhere outside of Israel, and you want to know what you're supposed to do, and Sukkot is coming. So I think that's why he's saying it's a little poker. It took him the whole night to write it up, because he's got lots and lots of stuff to do. So he's writing quickly, he's writing briefly, to tell him what's going on. So he says, the halacha psukka is in halacha in Shulchan Aruch, in Tav Tzadi Vav, receive Gimel, paragraph 3, that B'nai Eretz Yisrael is the real Israelis. We'll get back to this guy in a minute, but straight up Israelis who happen to be in exile for Yom Tov, asurin lasot melacha b'Yom Tov Sheni, they are not allowed to do malach on Yom Tov Sheni. A lot of Israelis, I know Israelis, who think, well, they're allowed to do malach as long as nobody knows about it, right? They do it in private. So the answer is that's what Shulchan Aruch says. Shulchan Aruch says you can't violate Yom Tov. You can't do those actions that we think of as a violation of Yom Tov on Yom Tov Sheni. Afilu datam nachzor l'Eretz Yisrael, even if they plan to go back to Eretz Yisrael. So how does planning to go back to Eretz Yisrael help them? Why do we have this whole category? What do people speak about datam lachzor as an issue, as a category? He says that's where, and this is an important kula that comes up in our times, heka she'adayin lo yigiu liyishuv Yisrael. If they haven't reached the place where Jews live, which were Yishuv Yisrael, then they don't have to worry about it. So if somebody found themselves in a place where there was no Jews at all on Yom Tov, which wouldn't be a great idea because it would mean the first day of Yom Tov they hadn't they kept it without any Jews around. But let's say that happened. They find themselves, you know, in a place where there's really zero Jews. So then they could keep just one day and ignore the second day, because the reason why they have to not do malacha, do anything that violates Yom Tov on the second day, is not because the place has a second day characteristic to it, right? That one argument you could have made was that the whole world other than Israel is a place that is required to keep 2 days of Yom Tov. But that's not actually what happened. What actually happened was Jews who lived outside of Israel sent the question once the calendar got fixed. They were told, you have to continue keeping 2 days as a minhag of your forefathers. But minhagim are established by people, not by just a place that has no Jews in it. So a place that has no Jews in it has no tradition, really have no Jews in it whatsoever. So if that comes up, I'll get to where that comes up in a second. So that's where the Da'at al-Lachzor becomes relevant. So Da'at al-Lachzor, a person who plans to go back, who counts as an Israeli who plans to go back to Israel, who finds him or herself in exile, in a place in exile, on a second day Yom Tov, in a place where Jews live, is not allowed to violate second day Yom Tov. And for him, it's mostly like it's second day Yom Tov. We'll see some exceptions to that in a minute. Can't violate it. So why do I care whether he's moved to exile or not moved to exile? Because if he's not moved to exile and he finds himself in a place, you know, in Kazakhstan where there's no Jews, so there he's allowed to keep only one day Yom Tov. That comes up today, and I only just recently heard somebody who I once heard give a psak 25, 30 years ago against what I'm about to say, and has now changed his mind about it. And he didn't even sort of admit or notice that he changed his mind. Where it does come up is that some people, I'm not saying you should or shouldn't do this, I'm just saying some people are willing to rely on the leniency. B'nai Eretz Yisrael, people live in Israel, and therefore keep one day of Yom Tov. They'll get on a plane on the second day of Yom Tov in Israel. In Israel, it's fine to get on a plane because it's not Yom Tov. The whole plane ride, they haven't reached Yishuv Yisrael while they're on the plane, because the only people on that plane are Jews who are only keeping one day Yom Tov. So they haven't and the plane hasn't reached Yishuv Yisrael. When they land, wherever they land, the airport also isn't Yishuv Yisrael, because the airport is like its own little community. There's nobody there, no Orthodox Jews, right? No observant Jews, probably no Jews at all, basically, unless those who are completely, unfortunately, unaffiliated. They don't come to the airport. So the airport doesn't count as Yishuv Yisrael, some people will tell you, and therefore the people who are counted as Israelis for Yom Tov could violate Yom Tov in the airport until Yom Tov ended, and then they go out. There are many Israelis who do this. I know this for a fact. Many Israelis who do this. That's where that comes up. But coming back to this guy in 1965, right? The halacha is, says to Eliezer, that even bitzina, even when there's nobody else around, you're not allowed to violate Yom Tov. The Mishnah Berurah says it that way as well. The Chayadim says it that way. You have to wear Yom Tov clothing. I've seen Israelis who don't do that. You have to wear Yom Tov clothing. I actually had a rabbi friend who once told me about Israelis who were in his community for 2 or 3 years, or for 1 year, I'm sorry, for 1 year. We'll get to the amounts of years or whether that makes a difference in a second. They were in his community for 1 year, and second day Yom Tov, they drove off on a vacation. So they were learned people, and I think they might have said to themselves, well, I'm getting out of Yishuv Yisrael, so it's okay. But the answer is, it's not, or nobody knows that I'm doing it. So the answer is, Tzina doesn't help, and you have to wear Yom Tov clothing. It's not like, so let's say you're supposed to come to Shul, you can't come to Shul in clothing that says to people, look, I'm in Israel, I'm not really keeping Yom Tov. Can't do it. So it's to the answer. But then he says, Da'at al-Lachzor does have some ramifications for you, because then it means also, the standard is, you have to also keep Chumrei Makom Sheyotza Misham. You have to keep the stringencies of the place that you left. So that would mean that on the second day of Yom Tov, so he says, Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galuyot, he at least means, you know, what we call Simchas Torah in the exile, the ninth day of Yom Tov. But he might mean the second day, meaning depending on, once you get outside of Israel, there's a difference of customs as to whether you're tefillin on Chol HaMoed. So if the person wears tefillin on Chol HaMoed, then he means literally the second day of Yom Tov as well. Second day of Yom Tov would be Chol HaMoed for the Israeli back in Israel. Here, if he in America, if his custom were in exile, his custom is to wear tefillin, he should put on tefillin in his house. So that would be Bitzina. That's not a malach. It's important to notice. That's not a violation of Yom Tov. It's something that somebody keeping Yom Tov would not do, but it's not a malach. So apparently Bitzina, whether people don't see it, you're allowed to act in ways that make it clear that you are being machmir as if it's not Yom Tov, as long as you're not violating their standards of what's necessary to be a minimal keeping of Yom Tov. So he should do that in his house before going to Shul. Notice, Tzitzel says he needs to be going to Shul. Why does he need to be going to Shul? He needs to go going to Shul because he can't make clear in any way that he's not keeping Yom Tov. This is for the straight-up Israelis. He'll hear for only one Chag. He's only here for Sukkot. He's a straight-up Israeli. It's just him alone. He's going back. All those issues we're going to get to, but that's not the question here. He's a straight-up Israeli. He's here for Yom Tov. He nonetheless has to keep Yom Tov. He has to go to Shul on Yom Tov, but on the second day of Yom Tov, that second day of Yom Tov, but he has to put on tefillin before he goes to Shul. And in his tefillin, he should say Kriyat Shema and Shmona Esrei. And he can say the whole Shmona Esrei. Doesn't that prove? I mean, I think you have to assume that wearing tefillin on a second day of Yom Tov isn't such a violation. It's not as much a violation as if people heard you saying the Shmona Esrei for Chol HaMoed, for a non-Yom Tov day, that would be more of a violation. But he's saying here, since he's whispering it, nobody will hear it. But they might catch him wearing tefillin, because we think that things we do in private, we can't assume are really in private. That's why we say that you can't do malachim in private, because if you're not going to bother anybody, do malachim. So the answer is, I think we think that you're going to be discovered, perhaps. That's why we say you have to say the Shemana Tzrei, it's balachash, it's in an undertone, so nobody will hear you, other than you yourself. So that's why it's okay. That seems to imply that he thinks that the wearing a tefillin on Yom Tov, it's a problem because they're both days of oat. So you're having two otot, but it's not such a tragedy if you have two otot. It's not like it's the worst thing in the world. It's not a complete violation, and that's why he thinks it's allowed. All of that, though, as interesting it is, and as important it is, if a particular individual Israeli who clearly plans to go back finds himself in America, in exile, for a Yom Tov, that would be the information that Israel wants him to have. That would be important information. But in the case of this family, he says to them, your case, I don't think it's true. I don't think you count as Dato Lachzor. I don't think you count as Israelis who happen to find themselves in America for Yom Tov and who think that they're going to go back, right? That's a halachic category. You're not in that category. Why not? First off, you've gone for more than a year. So going for more than a year, as it says, I think the halacha is that we don't worry about that anymore. Once somebody's planning on living in a place for a year, they're a resident of that place, and their future plans don't matter. Their future plans don't affect their halachic status for this year. That's a very important point to make, and I think it's a very interesting point, right? The Israeli thinks to himself, and he should, and we hope they think to themselves, I want to go back. Great. But the fact that I want to go back in more than a year, for the year now, this is my status. Not only that, he says, it's also true that since your wife and your children are with you, where you and your wife and children are, that's where you live fundamentally. And the fact that you plan to eventually go back, that doesn't change it. The Magen Avraham and Or HaChaim there in Tavtzad Yivav, in the Se'if Katan Zayin, in the paragraph 7 of the Magen Avraham's commentary, quotes a Radvaz, who says, and the Radvaz says, if somebody moves with his wife, then if they move somewhere with his wife, it doesn't matter how long they plan to be in the new place, that counts as Ein Dato Lachzor, and the Knesset HaGdola agreed with the Radvaz, and the Mishnah Berurah cites it. Now, it happens to be an interesting thing. I mentioned that I recorded a similar talk for another bet from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Other bet, I don't have so many choices, so it's not like I can pick and choose so well, so sometimes I have to repeat topics I've seen before, and it's interesting to watch Rav Moshe Feinstein deal with it slightly different than Tzitzit Eliezer. Rav Moshe Feinstein agreed with what the Tzitzit Eliezer now points out about the Mishnah Berurah, that they assume that the reason that the Radvaz gave was that since his wife is with him, if he finds a good job wherever he is, he would just stay, and that's why. And people have picked up on that. Rav Moshe Feinstein assumed that was true, the Mishnah Berurah assumed that was true, the Tzitzit Eliezer says, if you look at the Radvaz himself, and it's so interesting to me that he's willing to say this because it shows a certain halachic daring, which is his right. I'm not questioning his right to do it. It's just that everybody has this halachic willingness to go against the Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah says the reason is you find a good job, then you'll stay. And that, by the way, is in that other tshuva where Moshe thought that a guy counts an Israeli even though he's in America with his wife because he doesn't need a job, whatever the situation there. So this is, that's not what the Radvaz says. The Radvaz, if you look at it, he does mention the idea of getting a job, but his main claim, the Radvaz's main claim is that wherever your wife is where your living place is. And since you're there with your wife, that's where your living place is, and therefore you're now living in this place for now. Chayalim has it that way. The Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the Shulchan Aruch by Shnei Zalman of Liadah, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, has it that way. And also the Aruch HaShulchan makes it very clear. So there's a quote to the Aruch HaShulchan. He mentions those other sources, but he actually quotes the Aruch HaShulchan in paragraph 5 of Tzadi Vav. If somebody moves from with his wife from the land of Israel to outside of Israel to exile, even though they plan to come back, since he and his. Now, this is an interesting thing. We in the halachic literature often refers to a wife as beito, as his household. So it's sort of to say, wherever your wife is, that's really where your house is. So that's what it always means. People, I think, often take it as a derogatory, but I don't think that means derogatory. It means that that's where the man's life is, and here is a halakhic ramification of it. The Aruch HaShulchan says, since the man and his household, meaning the wife is the household, since she is with him, that's called dirak kavua. It's called they've moved their life to the new place. The chen yirah, at least, says the Aruch HaShulchan, it seems to be, dafilu balavado, imein dato lachzor ala harshana. And even if you don't have your wife with you, but if you're gone for a year, in our times it's much rarer because of the ease of travel, but let's say that certainly I knew of cases certainly in my life, people move somewhere with a year and their wife can't go with them. So nowadays they would do it by, he would go back and he would visit, and she would visit, and they would this, right? And they would work it out. But the Aruch HaShulchan says, even if you don't go with your wife, and even if you're not going to go back at all, especially if you're not going to go back, even if you don't go with your wife, so you think, that means your roots are still back in Eretz Yisrael. If you're going to be in the new place for a year, it's not clear to me it means a year straight or it means a year of regalim. People say that today about being in Israel. So anybody, there are poskim who are willing to say that if somebody's going to be in Israel for three regalim in a row, that will count as being a resident of Eretz Yisrael for these purposes. So you could say the reverse as well. But the Aruch HaShulchan is clear, if you're going to be there for a year, however we define a year, whether it's straight or breaks or whatever, if you're going to be there for a year, though, then you count as a resident of the new place, and Dato Lachzor stops being a relevant category. So that's his main claim for this family. He says, I don't understand. Your wife is with you. You're going to be there for more than you can be there for 2 years. You're Americans, right? You're Chileans. You're British. Whatever you are. That's where you are. So he says, if I have the Israeli accent and I'm moving back, doesn't matter. So like that's his main thing. Then he says, you know, some people say, you know what, the Radvaz didn't only mean that you move with your wife, and it didn't only mean that you might get a new job, although he says both of those things. The Radvaz also mentions that he brought all of his movable items, right? We talk about the difference between real estate and movable property. So movable property, you bring your couch and bed and TV, if you have a TV, couch and bed and whatever it is you bring with you. So that means that you've really moved. And that might imply that if you leave that stuff back there, and some people were trying to claim that, some Israelis thought, well, if I'm not moving, meaning as many Israelis who come, let's go to the code, they come for a year or two, they come to teach, they come to work for a year or two, three, whatever it is, they own a place back in Israel. So they might say, well, I own a place back in Israel. And sometimes they'll even say, and I left my furniture in the place that I own back in Israel, so shouldn't that count as I really still live in Israel? So he quotes a sefer called Shalom, he mentions a sefer called Shalom Eitz Zibor, who seems to have held that way. But a lot of people read that Radvaz and say, no, that was that if you take your wife and your family, the metaltalin don't matter. Why do I care if you leave your metaltalin? Is that going to be a factor that would stop you from staying here? Meaning the reason why, if your household is with you, meaning your wife, the reason why a man whose wife is with him is in the new place, like they're living there, is because they can decide at any time to stay. That's why the job possibility is brought up as well. They can decide to stay. The Rav is, meaning that there's understanding the Rav is just giving you a hechtimtze. He was giving you a circumstance under which you could imagine them deciding to just stay. But the answer is, if the couple is there and they're happy, they can just stay. So this is just says, so if you can imagine that, would the fact that they own a couch or two, or a bed or two, or, you know, or a dresser or two back in Israel be the reason they wouldn't stay? Clearly not. And the fact that it's clearly not, says Stilezer, means that that can't be a reason why we would think of them as Israelis when they're now living in Chicago. Not only does he think that in general, he thinks that's just clearly true because the metaltalin will not be the factor that would stop a person or a couple or a family from deciding. Meaning, I know of people who come to teach Torah in a place for a couple of years, and they're Israelis. And so the first couple of years, they might have argued we're planning on going back. And then what happens is they find that they feel they're being productive, and I'm not judging, I'm saying what happens. They feel they're being productive, they feel they're teaching Torah, they feel they're having success, they decide to stay. That's the Radvaz's point. As soon as you're in a situation where you can decide to stay, the Radvaz says, well, then you're a resident of that place for the purpose of whether you have to keep a second day Yom Tov. So you're now a resident of the place. If you ever decide to go back, great, so you'll go back, and then you'll be a resident of the new place. Resident can change very quickly. The only question is, how do you count now? So then the Radvaz had mentioned this question of metaltalin, of leaving back your movable property. They're just saying, though, but today, movable property is not in any way a factor that would stop somebody from yes moving or no moving. And so he says, and it could be, and even the Radvaz who mentions that that was because back then, where people were very poor and where living standards were much lower, and therefore the question of selling your metaltalin, you might need the money that's tied up in your couches and in your beds and having to buy all new furniture, that might be a reason that would have stopped people from doing it. But in our times, the whole investment of furnishing a house is still a significant investment, but it's not so significant investment that it will be a reason that you can't, I think that those are accurate. You can't imagine somebody saying, you know what, I'm living here, I'm really happy where I am, I'd love to stay, but you know what, I have a bed back in Israel, I just got, I don't know what to do about it. Right, this doesn't happen anymore. So it says, right, so that standard may have been a relevant standard in the time of the Radvaz. He thinks, A, he doesn't think the Radvaz really meant it that way, but B, even the Radvaz, that would be because of the standard living back then and of the high cost, the high investment in furniture, so then it would really be a barrier to people being willing to stay where they were, and they would feel like they have to go back because of what they do. Now, he says he thinks it's probably true even of an apartment. I could imagine somebody making the claim that if I own an apartment and it's in an area that I can't sell it easily or I can't rent it out easily, I can imagine somebody claiming that Steelers is not going to buy that argument, but I can imagine somebody claiming that should prove that there's no way that I'm going to stay and therefore that should maintain me as an Israeli. But the Steelers doesn't really buy that argument. He really thinks that once the couple is there together, and especially they're more than a year, that's enough to define them as residents of the new place, and therefore they have to keep Sekhet Yontov full up without thinking of themselves as Israelis. Accents not helping them whatsoever. And then he points out the Avdei Nezer thinks that as soon as a man leaves with his wife and his children and is going to be there for a year, then even if he had like a huge investment, right, a big house, an investment back in the old place, he would nonetheless immediately be a resident of the new place. And then he has another kuntres, the Avdei Nezer has another kuntres, has another essay at the end of the book, and he talks about this issue again. And he says that since nowadays the whole keeping of a second day Yom Tov is a minhag avotecha miyadechem, it's pro forma, meaning when it originally started the custom, it started because Jews in certain places did not know they didn't know when the holiday was supposed to be, and they had to keep both days just in case they thought they knew, but just in case the other day was the holiday, they kept the other day. When the calendar became fixed, that should theoretically have gone away. So that's a discussion in the Gemara. The Gemara offers two reasons why they had to continue keeping Sekhet Yontov. One was maybe a new kingdom would arise or a new government would arise that would stop them from having contact and information about Sekhet Yontov. This today, in the time of the internet, I think it's harder to imagine that being true, but for thousands of years, it was easily true. Even in the Soviet Union, there were times when, which is not so long ago, there were times when I think it might have been hard for Jews in the Soviet Union to know exactly how the calendar worked, even though it had been fixed. So that was one reason. The other reason was just to keep the minhag of your forefathers without that being explained. Now this is, once it's for those reasons, and it's not really a function of the place that you're in, it's really a kazal of the time having decided this is what should happen, then he says he thinks that the Avdei Nezer holds that any Israeli, even if they count as Israeli, even if they're going back right after Yontov, they're just about Yontov, he thinks they'd have to keep a second day. Right? So the Avdei Nezer is making the claim that once the calendar got fixed, one day and 2 days were no longer really a matter of you as a person and whether you're a resident of the exile or a resident of Eretz Israel. It's a function of where you are. If you're in a place where there are Jews and it's an exile, it's 2 days, wherever, whoever you are. And if you're in Israel, then it says, and I had not seen this before. I know Rav Moshe Feinstein, as far as I know, did not quote this Chacham Tzvi. The Tzitzit Ezra now references the Chacham Tzvi, and he just mentions it as a plausible idea. The Chacham Tzvi and Simon Kuf Samach Zayin, and this is what many Americans today, many Jews from outside of Israel today rely upon, the Chacham Tzvi said the same idea as the Avdei Nezer earlier, he said it before him, in reverse. He said that once the calendar got fixed and the idea was that Jews outside of Israel had to keep a second day, it was only if they were outside of Israel. It's not a function of them as people. It's a function of the place that they're in. But if they're in Israel, he held, they would just keep one day for various reasons. Because he thought that was the original custom. The original custom was that if you were in Israel, you would know then which day was which, and then you keep it. So when they fixed the calendar, that was the way they set it up. So both the Avdei Nezer and the Chacham Tzvi are agreeing that the idea of a fixed calendar means that the one-day, two-day question doesn't depend on the definition of one's place of residence. It depends on where one happens to be. for the Chacham Tzvi part of the question, that's not our issue today. Our issue right now is that this Avnei Nezer strongly supports the idea that Israelis found outside of Israel, the Avnei Nezer seems to be holding, not seems to be, is holding, found outside of Israel, regardless of whether they're going to go back, and regardless of how we define them halakhically, have to keep 2 days, because that's what happened when the calendar got fixed. So he quotes other sources that ratify some of these ideas. You don't need to, for his purposes with this couple, with this family, you don't need any one particular of them, right? They all support the idea this family would have to keep a straight up 2 days, not with the chumrot, you know, not with the idea of putting on tefillin the second day, all that kind of stuff. That's only relevant if you're not going to hold like the Avnei Nezer. If you're going to reject the Avnei Nezer's idea that wherever you are is how he defines you in terms of keeping a second day, if you're going to reject that and you count as Israeli still, which would seem to mean you're not going to be there for more than a year and your wife's not with you, so then you'd keep the Chumra version where you'd keep a second day fully in terms of not doing malacha, not violating it. You'd wear Yom Tov clothing. You'd go to shul. Before you went to shul, you'd put on tefillin and you'd say Kriyat Shema and you'd say the Shemoneh Esrei silently to yourself of a chol, of a non-holiday day. Many notes that there's those who quote mystical sources, Kabbalistic sources, a few of them, including the Shulchan Aruch Rav, the new Shulchan Aruch written by that new, like it's so different, but like he reordered it and he wrote it in a different style and he updated it with new ideas that come along in the course of the hundreds of years between his time and the Shulchan Aruch's time. He also says the Pianistar, by the mystical, by Kabbalistic ideas, people from Israel who come to Chutz Laretz, they have to keep the Kedusha of the second day, even if they're planning on going back. So that's not a halachic argument, that's a Kabbalistic argument, but it would be the same kind of idea. I would say that the nature of exile is that it has 2 days of holiday in it, and therefore if I'm there, I have to keep it, and that's in the Shulchan Aruch Rav. So fundamentally, they have to keep 2 full days, and therefore he says, I'm not going to tell you all the halachos that would come up if you would count it as people who were planning on going back. There are other halachos that come up in that situation, but I'm not going to go into that because, in fact, I think you have to keep 2 days. And then he puts in this important phrase, sentence, I think. Please be very careful to keep it very well. Because the poskim are all very clear that Israelis in America have to keep 2 days. So I think that's a caution that people don't realize, don't recognize, don't remember sometimes. They just take, they know a little bit of halacha, and they say, oh yeah, if you're from Israel, you don't have to keep 2 days. So the answer is not so clear at all, and there are many more Israelis who have to keep 2 days that I think maybe realize what they have to do. And then at the very end, he says, by the way, I was also asked about the following interesting question. I was asked just after Sukkot. I don't know if he wrote this to the original family, or if he puts this at the end of this tshuva, because it happens to fit in there, and he wrote it in later. But at the end, after Sukkot, he was asked about a boat, a ship, of people coming to live in Israel, Olim Chadashim, right? Remember the time when people used to go to Israel regularly by boat because plane wasn't so easy to do. So you had a big group of Olim, a big group of people coming to Israel. They came by boat, and the boat docks on the second day of Yom Tov. So when the second day of Yom Tov started, they had been outside of Israel. They'd been in exile. They'd been on a boat. So they kept the second day of Yom Tov. So they started keeping the second day of Yom Tov. Now the boat docks, and they want to know, do they have to continue keeping second day of Yom Tov? Because they're in Israel now, and they fully intend to stay in Israel now, right? They really are residents of Israel. They're making Aliyah. They're coming here for that exact purpose. So he says, he looked into it, and Munkas Elazar had said, nope, you have to keep it as Yom Tov because you started it as Yom Tov, right? That's his basic idea. It's not what you're a resident of. It's once you start the day as Yom Tov, you give it to Yom Tov, which means when you say keeping it as Yom Tov, you're not going to put on tefillin that day. Putting on tefillin is a big deal. So if it's really supposed to be chol, if there's any chance to think of it as chol, you'd say, let them put on tefillin at least, right? We saw it's not such a violation of Yom Tov. He says, nope, you don't put on tefillin. You don't daven for chol. Since you already made it Yom Tov, you made it Yom Tov. And then he quotes B'tzila Chachma, a book of Tshuva that we've seen, he says, which is a new publication in a book called Psalach Chachma. He also goes on at great length to support the Minchas Elazar, and therefore he too, the Tzidkiyos are passing that way as well, that once you started a day as Kadosh, you can't then in the middle of the day change it, and therefore you have to keep the whole day. So that is a reminder that the halachos of second day Yom Tov, which apply in exile, apply to perhaps more people than we think of, and a reminder of that these complicated issues of how to keep a second day in Israel and outside of Israel come up in various ways and with various complications that make it worth asking our poskim about it. In this case, we learned some of the issues of it from the Tzitz Eliezer in a responsible day for the 12th of Tishrei. Ha'ktiva v'chatima tova.